Good evening, everyone. Thanks for sticking with us here, having a fascinating conversation with Bob Lazar and Gene Huff. Our phone lines are open. They'll be taking your questions in just a couple of minutes. We've got an hour left with them, or about 50 minutes, and we'll try to get to as many of your calls as we can. In the meantime, Bob, I have one other question, and I'm almost reluctant to ask this because the guy I'm going to mention here, he and his group really thrive on any kind of attention they get, even negative attention. His name is Dan Burrish. Back when I first encountered him, his name is Dan Crane. He claims to be Dr. Dan Burrish and got his Ph.D. while holding down a full-time job in Las Vegas, apparently by traveling to New York, State University of New York, Stony Brook, on weekends to get a Ph.D. in genetics. And it's kind of a wild story. Now, I don't want to mischaracterize his story, because when the word came that you were going to be on the program and that I might ask questions about you, someone sent out an email and modified it under my name and said a lot of nasty things about Dan. So he and his group are pretty much going off anticipating that they're going to get slimed. Now, I don't want to do any slime.
Sliming. Who is this guy?
I had told you about him before. I interviewed you about him before. He has a story about that he worked out at the program basically at the same time that you were there. His job as a biologist was to interact with this alien named J-Rod, who's kept in a clean room facility that's below where the saucers are at S4. Now, I don't want to...
I remember you mentioning something about that. And he claimed he worked with me and...
Well, he didn't know you. No, he doesn't claim that he knew you. He just was in the program at the same time, but he was far more trusted of an employee since he got to interact with J-Rod the alien on a regular basis, and they became pretty good friends. I just in a general sense, does any of this ring true?
I mean, I've never heard of this guy, no, and in an alien named J-Rod. I've heard those stories from...
Bob, Bill Uhouse, the old gentleman
Guy that used to talk about that.
Yeah, he was the one that said the gray alien's name was J-Rod. Bob never said that.
Yeah, I know. Well, the Burrish and his crowd have sort of borrowed a lot of little bits and pieces from all kinds of UFO stories. I think they work for not only Majestic 12, but there's a battle between the Magi and the Illuminati, and you find any of this credible? And I don't mean to mischaracterize it. Okay.
No. Sounds like the typical silly UFO lore you hear all the time.
Okay. Well, we've probably spent more time on that than it deserves, and we're going to start taking some calls now. We'll go to our East of the Rockies line, Mike in Binghamton, New York. Mike, what's on your mind?
Hey, gentlemen. How are you?
Good evening.
It's a great privilege to speak with all of you. This actually is a little story I have to tell Bob. My father was a lieutenant colonel in the Air Force, and after he retired, we were taking a trip to Virginia to visit my brother, who works for a big computer company out in Seattle. We won't say who. We got talking about UFOs, and he... I mentioned Bob's name, and he got kind of like, how do you know that name? And I'm like, well, it's on all History Channel, and it's on Discovery Channel, and they have, you know, all kinds of, television programs about UFOs, and Bob's name comes up a lot, and they show all his, you know, things, you know, that he's been talking about. And, boy, he got so nervous, and he was, like, looking at me like, oh, my gosh, and then I started bringing up Stanton Friedman, and he got even more freaked out. And, you know, it was rather disturbing that, you know, here is, this is my father, and I mentioned Bob's name, and he was like, he got all shaky and nervous. And, it just makes me stop to think, you know, Bob, your story, I totally believe you. I 100%, you know, I have no doubts that, you know, the government is doing what they're doing and just not telling us.
Well, that's certainly a strange story, but I've actually heard other people say similar things.
Did you ever ask your father? Did you probe to find out why that was his reaction? Or,
well, yeah, and once we got to Virginia, I started asking him. Preston Nichols, and the Montauk experiments and all that stuff. And he like got all freaked out. And he's like, how do you know about all this stuff? And it's like, look, I study this stuff, you know. I just got done reading Brian Greene's The Elegant Universe. I kind of do, you know, read a lot of physics and stuff on my own and, you know, quantum mechanics and stuff, trying to learn more about it. And then I told him, I says, well, I also read this book called The Day After Roswell by Colonel Philip Corso. And my God, the second I mentioned his name, my dad was like, he was like, all right, let's just stop talking about this. This is freaking me out.
Hey, thanks, Mike. We appreciate the call. We're going to move along. We appreciate the call and the story, and maybe we can ask your dad to call us one of these days. We're going to go to a wild card line number one, Kathy in Western Massachusetts. She's up pretty late this morning. Kathy, what's on your mind?
Yes, I am. Good morning. My situation with the government was local, on a local level. It was quite different than Bob Lazar, and it was not as serious. But believe me, I do believe you, Mr. Lazar, totally. After what I went through on my level, the government, when you're trying to bring something public and you do that, they do harass you, they do follow you, and they do try to discredit you, and they will try to destroy you. So I do understand what you've been through, and it is quite a situation to go through in life. But, you know, they the more they intimidate you, the stronger you get, I think.
Well, that's what people say, but I don't know. It gets pretty tiresome, you know. I thought this stuff was pretty much over with. We're talking about, you know, events that occurred, you know, we're coming up on 20 years. This is ridiculous. And,
yeah, well, mine was a 20-year history also, and it's quite ongoing. And the more I push the subject, the more I go public or the more I try to get it into court, the more trouble I get into. And the phone calls are very harassing, very threatening.
What was it that happened to you? What?
I'll tell you what, Kathy, you're going to have to hold the story because...
What I found out about a hospital, I was quite naive when I went into this, and it turned out to be that they practically destroyed me.
Kathy, I'm going to have to thank you for your story, for your call, but we need to take a short break right now. We'll be right back with more calls, more of your calls for Bob Lazar and Gene Huff. I'm George Knapp in for Art Bell on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Knapp in for Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM. We're taking your calls for Bob Lazar and Gene Huff. Let's go to our first time caller line, Patrick in New Mexico. Patrick, fire away.
Thank you, George. You're doing a wonderful job. Bob Lazar, I knew Bob Lazar in San Antonio, but I really appreciate listening to you. You're very intelligent. But the reason I'm calling is I want to discuss Indian Springs Air Force Base. I was my father was stationed there in 56 and 57. Mm-hmm. And when they were doing the above and below ground testing behind Mercury Mountain there.
Mm-hmm.
And 56, and 50, when I was 54, I was the epitome of health. Now I've got three types of cancers. I'm going into my second aneurysm surgery this week. My teeth are falling out. And I just wanted to ask you the question as to whether you knew anything about whether the government knew that 40 years later, the radiation. See, we used to be out in the desert. My friends and I, we'd have these car hoods, you know, where cars would run down the arroyos there, and mm-hmm. we'd take the car hoods off, and we'd see the wave coming, and we'd hold the car hood up to see if we could hold it up. Sometimes we could, sometimes we couldn't.
You're know? Kidding me.
No, I swear to God. Oh, and one interesting thing about UFOs, when we would go out and we would use those car hoods as a tent at night, we'd build a little fire in front of the car hood, you know, so snakes wouldn't come in, but we would sit out in front of the fire, and I remember, we knew nothing, I was a kid, you know, we knew nothing about UFOs, and I remember several times at night, this round object would come over us all the time, and we'd look up and go, look at that plane, it doesn't even have wings on it, you know?
Are you saying you surfed the shock wave from the explosion?
That's what I was harping on, too.
several times. My sisters had 28 surgeries. Yeah, they used to, when the shockwave would come, several times they would send, it would blow the windows out on the base housing across from across the highway from the base, and they would send these paddy wagons out, and within an hour all the windows would be replaced. You know, I swear to you, they would have all the women and children that, of course, we would always be out in the desert, but they'd have all the women and children go into the bathroom so the if the blast came, it would, the glass wouldn't cut them, you know.
At Indian Springs.
Apparently you've ignored the cardinal rule, which is never stand near an exploding atomic bomb.
Well, I mean, it was behind Mercury Mountain. You couldn't see it go off, you know. I mean, all you saw was just the wave coming. Oh, you'd see the cloud maybe behind the mountain when it sometimes, but not very often, but you just see the wave coming towards you. We didn't know anything. Heck, I was born in 51, and this was in 56 and 57, you know.
I really even doubt that the government was that familiar with the long-term effects of radiation at that point, just judging on how they treated their own people and, you know, the limited amount of information.
Look at the atomic cannon when they get ready to charge after the wind blew past, you know. So
there are a lot of interesting stories that I've heard about that Indian Springs base. It was there before Area 51 was created. I've been told that some of the technology, recovered technology, had been stored there before it was transferred to Groom Lake. Some real interesting stories that you hear about the base. Patrick, thank you very much for calling. We're going to go now to our wild card line. Bob in North Hollywood, are you there?
Yeah, hi, this is Bob from North Hollywood. Hi, Bob Lazar.
Hi there.
Hi. It's funny, I've been, I used to work on a stealth fighter project, and I'll just ask you a few quick questions just for my curiosity about your background. You're aware that the Aurora Project does exist, is that correct?
You're kind of choppy there. Are you on a cell phone or something?
Sorry, I'll clear it up. I'm sure better now. Are you aware of the existence of the Aurora Project?
Yeah, I've heard it mentioned several times, and one time officially, from what I understood, is that it was a supposedly a replacement for the SR-71, a high-altitude, high-performance reconnaissance aircraft.
You didn't ever see it, though, did you, Bob?
I saw one thing taxiing out on Area 51 at one point, and you remember John Andrews for the Testers Model Corporation. He was always intimately familiar with military aircraft, and I drew him a sketch of the plane because I saw it, the closest view I had from it as we were driving by was a rear view of it. And I drew it for him, and I think the guy Jim Goodall, who was intimately familiar with aircraft and the SR-71 and all sorts of spy planes, in fact, even wrote a couple of books, and both those guys had mentioned, well, maybe that's Aurora. But maybe it wasn't. But anyway, that's all I know about it.
Bob, if I remember correctly, didn't you say that the sound of the engines was so loud it sounded like a perpetual explosion?
Yeah, it sounded like, in fact, I think the word I said was it sounded like the air was ripping. It was a really unusual sound and, yeah, incredibly sharp and, explosive sounding, I guess you can say.
That may or may not have been the Aurora. Bob, what was your other question? Bob in Hollywood, what was your other question?
I'm impressed. That's correct. If you know, the Testers model that was released of the F-117A before the F-117A was released was actually the Aurora. If you've seen the model, that's what the Aurora looked like.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it's pretty close. We nicknamed it the Wedge and the Dorito at first. And
so you were involved with this project?
I left just as the beginning of the project was starting, and the engine works on a hydrogen system. Are you aware of the hydrogen system the engine's using? I was just curious.
Well, hydrogen and methane, yeah, because that's kind of a pseudo scramjet then, right? Because you have supersonic flow in the engine.
That's correct. Yeah, it what most people would call it is a pulsing. It pulses.
Uh huh.
Did that too. We figured out a way how to nullify the gravitational forces by pulsing the engine. And the one part that I did work on was to the cockpit area that keeps the pilot from being crushed from the G forces.
So is this a reconnaissance aircraft? Is that really what it is, or do you have?
It was a replaced SR-71. We started flying them first in '92. And they're going to declassify it within 8 years from now. They're going to declassify it to the public.
Jeez, they're in no hurry.
No. We need to replace it. Our new replacement we're coming up with is a different type of propulsion system that looks like a saucer. the next one we're replacing. Are you familiar with the next generation called Next Gen, which we're going to replace this, the Aurora with?
No, I've never even heard that term in relation to an aircraft before.
Okay, and that's similar to what you say you're working at Area 51. Do you know the correct term? Because we have a nickname for Area 51. Do you know the correct term that we use for it?
I've heard so many different ones from it. You know, I don't know if if they just make up different names or some of it is, you know, I've heard scorecard. I've heard
the box, the ranch, streamland.
The ranch, yeah, that's what I was trying to pull up. I've heard so many. I don't. What did you? Have you heard a new one or?
Yeah,
call it something different.
Yeah, there's a few. Yeah, actually, I was just testing you a little bit. Yeah, most of the people, well, we call it the ranch, basically. And there's other little nicknames, but just little groups of people call it different things. I've just seen which you're close to. Anyway, one of the biggest things I want to bring up right now is that this is going to sound really strange. If Bob Lazar's story isn't weird enough, but are you aware that we do have in our custody what we term is space aliens? We have them, and we're actually using them. We're actually large corporations like 3M. We're actually charging $250,000 an hour to have them structure a business. Actually, it's really bizarre, but we are doing that. We've been making money off these.
What makes you believe that?
They're proficient businessmen.
Who told that to you? And you know that was so convincing. You have to agree. It sounds crazy, right? So why, you know, what did anybody present any evidence to you, or you know, what makes you think that's true?
There is evidence. The reason why I'm bringing it up is because we had a meeting. We're bringing what we call, it's a space alien. It's an individual who we have working on some of our projects because their ability to think outside the box.
What's he look like?
I can't go there. But the thing is that...
Now, wait a second. You already told us that we've got aliens and they're consulting major corporations. You can't tell us what they look like?
No, it's just something that really no one wants to really discuss. They're not that, big. Well, anyway, I'll tell you right now, the Supreme Court. If you look in the Supreme Court, there's a lawsuit filed. A major corporation had paid $250,000 for an hour visit with one of the space aliens. A news reporter leaked out the story, and a news reporter was waiting for a space alien to arrive at this corporation, and it's in the Supreme Court files. You can look at it. Supreme Court, there was a lawsuit filed against the U.S. government because they charged $250,000 an hour for a meeting of a space alien, and a reporter blew it in the security. Everything fell apart.
Where do you – how do you employ him? How do you retain him? See the yellow pages under space aliens, or how do you get a hold of him?
Military contracts. It's military generals and stuff that have contacts with certain corporations that supply exotic materials for the projects. To say some of the projects like Bob was working on was an exotic project which needed certain materials from certain companies. And they would actually have used one of these individuals. They call them, I'm not saying it's a real space alien, but they call them a space alien. And it could be a biological robot. It could be a machine. I'm not going to really get into detail about it. But this device for this individual has the ability of an IQ, it's over 200, of an IQ of over 200. So you can imagine what kind of power that is for any corporation.
Hey, Bob in North Hollywood, thanks for the call. That's a very interesting story. We're going to take a short break right now. Yeah, I guess you would say a guy, if it's a space alien, would think out of the box, wouldn't he, by definition? Maybe Art Bell, when he gets back and can get the $250,000 together and have that alien sit in as a co-host one night, that'd be a pretty good show. More questions? Yeah, more questions for Bob Lazar and Gene Huff when we return to Coast to Coast AM in just a moment. Good evening, everyone. Thanks for sticking with us this late. We're speaking with Bob Lazar and Gene Huff, taking your calls, and we're going to jump right back to the phones. Josh in Las Vegas on the wild card line. Josh, you're a hometown guy. We got to give you a shot here. What's on your mind?
And I'll tell you something. This is a great pleasure having Bob Lazar, Gene Huff, and the great George Knapp together for this great session. I'm enjoying it thoroughly. Bob, I feel like I know you. I moved to Vegas in 91. Sometime in 94, I traipsed into like a mom-and-pop type video store and came across your video and was pretty taken aback by it. I wound up, you know, looking to join MUFON. I talked to Glenn Campbell, stuff like that. But anyway, Bob, I have the utmost respect for you. I believe your story. I truly do. I guess my question is, if you know, you don't want to talk about it anymore, you just kind of want it to go away, but you actually made a video. You came out and made a video. And
right, the video wasn't exactly, because the video was intended to stop me from talking about it. At the time in the 80s, all I was doing was getting tons and tons of phone calls for interviews, and this is just something I wanted to get away from, and it would be just so much easier to put one complete interview on tape and hand it out to the people that wanted to, you know, wanted an interview and be done with it. And that was the original intention of the tape.
I'm just curious what substance is the story about Dennis, your boss, your former boss, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
Chasing you around downtown, like through the Union Plaza, things like that. I mean, is this to this?
You cut out there for a second.
Meaning, is it a real story? Is there proof of it? And I think
Well, actually, with that particular story, actually, Gene just happened to be there at that time. The whole Union Plaza thing,
right.
And I mean, Gene can tell you what he saw. We went down there as per Dennis. Dennis's instructions, and well, go ahead, Gene. Tell him what you saw.
Well, you know, just as an observation, for instance, you know, Bob approached this guy to talk to him, and the guy walked right by him and didn't stop and talk to Bob with a strange look on his face, as though we thought maybe Dennis was being followed. And I guess that's possible. So Dennis Mariani went over to the blackjack table, and now it's a Saturday night in Las Vegas, and a telling thing is this guy sat in a chair with two beautiful women on each side of him, low-cut tops, you know, Saturday night, they're drinking in Las Vegas. This guy sits down to play blackjack, and he doesn't look to his left, he doesn't look to his right, he's looking down to his cards and nowhere else, just to kill time and play blackjack. Bob walked right up to him to start like up a conversation. He tried to get rid of Bob. Bob came over to me and said, I'm going to try one more time to go talk. We turn around. Dennis has gotten up and is speeding out of the casino, and so the meeting never took place. But the whole atmosphere there, it seemed like Dennis Mariani must have seen someone following him, because, I mean, he looked exactly like Bob described him. I mean, you know, I could tell that was Dennis Mariani, but even while calling for a meeting with Bob and being told to meet down there, he just wouldn't talk, and he left in a hurry. So someone else must have been there besides Dennis Mariani.
Yeah, we certainly suspected that it happened, and as it turned out, this was apparently some ruse to get us out of the house, because subsequent to that, when we got back to my place, something of importance pertaining to all this was missing. So,
right.
All that stuff is true, and there were, you know, my friends of that time, the people that were close to me at that time, were all involved with this, and, you know, they went through this with me, and some of them had rough times. Some were investigated by the IRS. I had one friend that was attempting to get clearance to, work for the government, and he lost that. And the reason given was his involvement with me, and the people around me were exposed to all this stuff. So although I can't, you know, present physical evidence, there are witnesses to some of these events here and there as they occurred at that time.
I can also tell you that I made a lot of effort to try to find Dennis Mariani, if that was his real name. I did find one gentleman, an address in Palmdale, which is an interesting town if you think about it in relation to this kind of stuff, but was never able to find Dennis Mariani himself. Josh, is that it? Okay, Josh is gone, so we've got Roy on our West of the Rockies line. Roy, you still there?
You betcha.
What's on your mind?
I happen to know the individual that took Bob when he got fired. And I know on a previous program, Bob said he mentioned 28 people that he knew at Area 51, and Denny took him down when he got fired. Do you remember Denny, Bob?
Well, when I got fired, are you talking about when I went to
the morning
Indian
you got,
Springs? To the
morning
debriefing?
You got, the morning you were taken down when you got fired? Remember that individual took you down there?
Well, they never really fired me. I mean, you know, it was just never a call to come back. I mean, there was no official firing. The only time I was ever taken anywhere was during the you know, debriefing after Gene Huff and friends were,
were you suggesting we were all caught out there?
His name was Benny, and he was a long-haired Paiute Indian. Remember him?
No, I never saw
Paiute. Where are you suggesting he was taken to?
Well, I don't remember where he went, but he mentioned on a previous program a couple of years ago, or about 3 years ago now, that he knew 28 people at Area 51, and he said Benny took him down when he got relieved or debriefed, and I called up Danny, and he said, yeah, he said, I told him he was talking too much, he should keep his mouth shut.
Ah, well, I
probably
don't
recall
ever.
Back for you to remember, but anyhow, I do know, it was mentioned earlier in the program, one called J-Rod. I've been able to communicate with him and his brother Trilly, and I do have a video of him that was sold on Art Bell's program in 1997.
There was a video show or sold of
on Coast to Coast. I have a copy of it. J. Rod and Crilly, his brother. J. Rod was the one that crashed at Roswell in 1947 out on the desert, and he had 12 aboard.
It was an alien, and he was on the Art Bell show?
Well, the video was presented by a guy called Victor, put out by Rocket Pictures in California.
Victor Martinez?
I don't know what his last name was because he didn't identify himself. He used a voice alteration device to cover his voice. He didn't say who he was other than he just used this alias name. But I've got the whole video. I've got J-Rod's picture. I've got Crilly's picture. And I've also got a picture of their sister.
What do they look like?
About 5 foot tall, black, big black eyes, covers over their eyes. All the technology we got was gotten from them. Area 51 and every place else, our computers, technology, fax machines, cell phones, all since 1947. Even the phone lines we're talking over today. I've been working with them for 3 years.
Well, Roy, that's an interesting, that raises some interesting possibilities.
I've got the job to open the door on all of the secrecy.
Who hired you?
Them.
Damn.
The ETs.
How much do you make?
I'm $9,000 in debt right now. I've got material to put together, about 129,000 words to put into two books. My father lives on another planet 700 light years from here.
Uh-huh.
You better get
busy for that.
And there's
hey, Roy, thank you for the call. We need to take a short break here, and we'll be right back with Bob Lazar and Gene Huff and your final couple of calls. So stick around on Coast to Coast AM. Good evening, everyone. You're back with George Knapp filling in for Art Bell on Coast to Coast Live. We have a few minutes left with Bob Lazar and Gene Huff. We have Eric in Georgia on our East of the Rockies line. Eric, are you still there?
Ooh, I'm here. How's it going, guys?
Okay, what's on your mind?
Honored to be talking to you. It's 5 a.m. here. I'm going to fall asleep like you almost did earlier, Bob. yeah, I'll try to make this quick. One of the previous calls, you were talking about names for Area 51. Well, I came up with something here. It's AFFTC Detachment 3, but I think it's something to do with Edwards Air Force Base. I think they have something to do with, like, running some of the things that go on at Groom Lake. I don't know.
I never heard that designation for
it's
it before.
It's like a Air Force Flight Test Center Detachment 3.
I think that's the first time I've heard that mentioned. I don't recall it ever being referred to by that.
It's popped up in some of the literature over the years. I think Glenn Campbell dug up some information on that. They believe that some of the programs that were conducted out of Groom Lake were under the auspices of that attachment, that group.
And also, I email Stan Friedman and Bill Hamilton on a pretty regular basis, and what I get from them is that they're pretty damn confused on you, you know, like a lot of people are, but I mean, I just wanted to mention that. And also, have you heard about what's called a TR-3B, like flying triangle, that's supposedly nuclear-powered and also uses like superheated mercury plasma?
No.
That's the Black Manta.
Yeah, they were seen, like, over Belgium in the late 80s, I believe.
You've heard of this, George?
Yeah, that's rumored to be one of the craft that's been tested out there over years. I don't think anybody's confirmed the existence of it. A lot of folks, some of the aviation writers, believe it doesn't really exist, but it's a story that keeps popping up.
Mercury is a fuel? Is that what you're...
Yeah, there's some kind of, I saw, I'm not too technical, but it was kind of like a superheated mercury plasma ring underneath the craft, and it was triangle-shaped, and it also uses some kind of nuclear power, and it's completely silent, but it was tracked, something similar to it in Belgium, 1989 on radar, they had contact and everything.
But I remember hearing about the Belgian sightings.
Yeah, those were the same triangle-type craft. Anyways, the real beef of why I called was, and I might actually get in trouble for this, but I've got a family member who works for EG&G, and he's got a top secret clearance. And, sorry, I'm a bit nervous. He actually flew spy missions over Japan and Russia way back, and he's worked on a lot of stuff. And, of course, he can't tell me the details, but I did manage to ask him about you, and he just said that he doesn't think there was any way you could, you know, go on TV and say the things you said without going to jail.
Well, if he went to jail, wouldn't that prove what he said had validity?
But that's exactly what I told him. But
it's a catch-22 type of deal. There's
You know, you mentioned Stan Friedman, and of course, Stan has been very critical of Bob all the way along, which is fine. You know, that's fine. And what I do give credit to Stan for actually doing some of the work. I mean, you know, a lot of the material that's come out about Bob, people follow it up and they say, aha, there's no evidence he was at MIT. Aha, Caltech, same kind of thing. Those facts were all reported in the very first story we ever did about Bob on the air. I do give Stanton Friedman credit for following up himself. I know that he, one of the things that he says that he dug up was he went to your high school and talked to somebody and they said you were a terrible student and you could never get into MIT. Of course, the school denies ever giving out that information and no one will confirm it. So I would suspect that if the shoe were on the other foot, Stanton would not accept that as evidence, but he has in your case.
However,
yeah,
George,
really,
you know,
it's really strange.
I have a lot of respect for Stanton Friedman for some of the things he's done, you know, for ufology historically. However, with regard to Bob's story, as you well know, when he heard Bob had worked at Los Alamos, he picked up a phone, called Los Alamos, said, does Bob Lazar work there? Somebody said no, and he said, well, that's it. Bob Lazar never worked at Los Alamos, and went on the record. And then, of course, you provided the phone book and other evidence that Bob, you know, worked at Los Alamos, not for Los Alamos. But he was totally willing to give up and get negative before he had done anything more than make a phone call back then. Now, maybe he proceeded to do other research, but at first, he that was a very half-hearted investigation.
Eric, anything else from you there? Eric is gone. You know, speaking of Los Alamos, it reminds me of, I mean, I spent 2 years going back and forth with those guys. At first, you know, they told me that Bob had never been there. I kept pestering them, tried to get it in writing. They finally said, okay, yeah, they came up with a Z number after I showed them his name in the phone book and the newspaper article listing him as a physicist. Then concentrated sort of on Kirkmeyer, which is the company that recruited you to work there, right, Bob?
That's correct. Yeah, yeah, that's who first got me out of Fairchild Electronics in California.
When I first contacted Kirkmeyer, they said, yeah, we've got the records, no problem, we'll be glad to give it to you, and then I didn't hear from them. I started phoning them on a regular basis, and they'd put me off. I have a stack of letters that we wrote back and forth to them, and after a while, after a couple of months of doing this, back and forth, they said, no, the records no longer exist. So, you know, that was sort of the problems that I faced all the way through this investigation. And, you know, I know there are people in the audience listening who don't believe it, they don't buy it, but there are strange parts of the story like that that are difficult to explain any other way, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and you're leaving out a plethora of other things, you know, down to the Social Security number and the, you know, employer ID number, and I mean, all kinds of things, the physical things that I could put forward. But, you know, everybody's entitled to their own opinion, but please don't pretend to know more about my life than I do. You know, these things really did occur. If, you know, you don't believe that, that's absolutely fine with me, and like I said, I'd actually prefer you maintain that. But, you know, this is the way it is.
We just have a couple of minutes left here. Gene, why don't you tell us what you've got going, a couple of projects, writing projects that you're working on, and then we'll ask the same question of Bob.
All right. I'm researching a book, basically. I told Bob about a chapter I was writing last week, and he wanted to make a T-shirt. And the chapter in the book was, I'm already ashamed to be an American. Let's stop this before I'm actually afraid to be an American. And what this is all about is I'm trying to examine, you know, anyone who, just about anyone you question who travels abroad today, if they're sitting in an airport lounge, whatever, overseas, no one even wants to admit or bring attention to the fact that they're an American citizen because they feel like they're a target. So I'm just examining how we got to this point, you know, why it's at this point, and maybe how we can prevent this from being perpetuated into the future.
Well, you have to let us know when that book comes out. And Bob, the same question to you. What's in store for you? I guess the most obvious one is you're waiting to see what happens with this, the possibility of legal charges, right?
Yeah, that is. But, you know, both my wife and I try and prevent that from dominating our mind. We're very busy with United Nuclear, which has turned into quite a big business. In fact, we're just finishing construction on our new facility, and we'll be producing and manufacturing all kinds of different scientific equipment and materials. So that this is keeping us busy most of the time. I'm still, you know, actively planning on releasing hydrogen system kits, and you know, though it's kind of difficult, we're just looking for ways around the regulations that are apparently in place. And you know, I assume I'll eventually be able to do this. The systems work quite well. The hydrogen generator is a little slow, so the process you use to make your own fuel needs improvement, but still, you know, things do work well, and there just has to be some common ground or some loopholes we can get through so we can legally sell this material without all the red tape. And, you know, it's something that I hope the people realize that are trying to prevent this from occurring. It's something that they'll benefit from, too. You know, this is something really that helps everybody.
Bob Lazar and Gene Huff, great to talk to you guys. Thanks for staying up so late. Thanks to all the callers who called in with their questions and stuck it out for all these hours. Thanks also to Art Bell for allowing me to sit in, and to George Norrie, all the staff at Premier Radio, and Lisa, the producer at down there at with the Coast to Coast program, for giving me this shot. I'm George Knapp, signing off on Coast to Coast. Art Bell will be back on April 15th. Thanks, everybody.